And that means we carry on with community meetings, and we are about to hear from the mayor of Globe, Al Gameros, who is walking in as we speak to tell us what's been going on in the city of Globe. So, Al, thanks for coming, and what's new?
Thank you, and good evening and Happy New Year.
Yes, you too.
You bet. Well, like I said, I always come in and I like to review my monthly report, and my December report was, as another year ends, I want to extend my gratitude and well wishes and happy holidays to, you know, our council, our city staff, and all our residents and all the Globe Miami community. You know, it's hard to believe another year's gone by already. It's just flying by. 2023, you know, has been filled with remarkable achievements and milestones in our city. And again, these would have not been possible without the dedicated work of our staff that continues to support our council's visions and goals. Together, we've worked at providing recreational opportunities, upgrade to our infrastructure, providing housing opportunities, and continue our economic development plans for a strong and sustainable city for the future. So it's all about working together and buying into the same plan. We've continued our vision of our strategic action plan and even expanded it with addition allocations at the state from the state and federal funding to continue to build our foundation. You know, as I reflect back in this year's accomplishments, I'm truly honored to be part of this journey to help elevate Globe to another level and make it a destination that people want to come and visit and possibly live. As we look forward to 2024, we'll be launching many more projects with the assistance again from federal and state funding. Although we have been working at the implementation of our plan for the past 6 years, there is still more work to be completed. And I think Tim mentioned that, you know, things don't happen right away. I thought when I took office, and I'm in my seventh year also, is that, you can get things done right away, and it doesn't happen that way.
No.
It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
And it's a lot of moving parts and moving people and all that, of course. And funding comes from multiple sources, so it does take a lot of time.
You know, you've got it. And, you know, we're in a different time now. We're very fortunate that the funding from the infrastructure, federal and state funds, have come through, and you know, we've had these projects that have been on the shelf for many years, and trying to figure out how to fund them, and so we were ready for them. If we don't go get them, somebody else is going to get them.
Yes.
So we were very fortunate to have numerous projects in on the shelf, ready to go. I just want to thank our residents for their continued support and their patience as we continue this plan into the future, which is much more to come. You know, in 2024, today we started the replacement of the Cottonwood Bridge, and that was a $3.5 million allocation from the state through ADOT, and we'll be replacing that bridge. That was the second bridge. Connie's was our priority, and Connie's was our second one. And we have two other bridges that we're also looking at and looking for funding to replace within our city. You know, it's mm-hmm. very old, and we got to look forward to that. You know, we'll also be looking forward to the sidewalk project, which would be going down Jess Hayes Road and all the way to the college mm-hmm. from our new Connie's Bridge area. So we'll be going out to bid. I think it is in our meeting tomorrow night. We'll be going after contracts for a company for design for the sidewalk mm-hmm. project and see how we move forward with that, what we want to incorporate in the construction of it. So I want to talk a little bit about, I did mention it last month about the Marigold project. I mentioned that on December 6th at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, the board members heard a request to increase the allowed building height from 36 feet in our code to 86.5 feet from natural grade, and then the uninhibited roof projections up to 115 feet. So really that really gives them the option for 7-8-story building, which we've never had in our city. We've limited it to 36 feet, which is about a 3-story building.
Right.
So this request is for portions of the Marigold Project preliminary site located at the Highway 60 North, and that's the former Apache Drive-In location.
Mm-hmm.
And this is by the developer Monte de Globe Operations, LLC. The applicant has requested that the design and site plan review approval be accomplished in two separate phases. And they did that by bringing the first phase is for the exception of the maximum allowed height. And now they'll go back to the table now that they have that approval, and they'll submit the second phase for the overall site. So everything that we've seen are all conceptual drawings, but they basically are what they're looking for building in that area.
That's great. There's no reason not to extend that. I love that it's working.
You bet. Yeah, and it was a 6-0 vote on planning and zoning. You know, they had public there for and against, and it was more, you know, they understand that growth is going to happen, growth is going to take place, and that's our area of growth is the Northeast Corridor.
Sure it is.
You know, that's it's very hard to find places that are flat where we can actually put, you know, large developments in. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to start thinking about going vertical, really, in order to take up space.
Sure.
So the preliminary master plan, it provides for a mixture of land uses, including single-family homes, townhouses, garden apartments. They also have a mid-rise apartment over commercial offices, a hospitality use convention hall, something that we definitely need in our community, a place where people can rent and have events and stuff. It includes a chapel, recreational facilities, and there's going to be a parcel for public safety facilities, police and fire, you know, for future as that place grows up in that area.
Good.
And, you know, like I said, these are all conceptual drawings. And the initial ones show a 7-story structure. And it also shows a 3-story parking garage as part of their future final plans. So, you know, that's something, even the downtown area, we need to start looking because...
Well, yes.
We don't have no land, and we may someday in the future see, you know... parking, you know, 3-story parking garages or 2-story parking garages in the future in downtown.
Right. If you increase the population much, you're really going to need to do something because right now it's doable to go downtown and park in the public lots, but it's you can see that it's getting maxed out.
You
and then
bet.
When you have the new projects like we talked about last month, the new housing that's coming in for senior housing, mm-hmm. and 64 units and 36 spaces or whatever,
yep.
You know, the math doesn't work out. So,
exactly.
Yep. Especially when if you live here for the most part, you have some form of personal transportation because
yep.
otherwise you're not getting out of here.
Yep.
So, I vote for the parking garages.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think it, hopefully we're hoping it works itself out. I know they're working on parking spaces, but I've received several calls on seniors that want to move there.
Yeah.
Some of them don't even drive, but they want a place where they can actually go to and socialize and live. And
absolutely.
And they're able to walk. Their Safeway that's close, the post office,
yes.
the downtown area. So they're really excited about that, which is great.
Good.
Further on the applicant, they're also seeking confirmation on a proposed density of 570 total dwelling units in mixed-use buildings and 129 units in residential neighborhood design.
Okay.
So it's a combination of all those, and this project is the first new horizontal mixed-use development in the city's history and the
yeah.
largest planned development globe since the original development of the Globe Town site, really,
mm-hmm.
if you look at it. You know, in the past 15 years, our city has recorded about 176 new dwellings, and that includes a Hill Street school. So it's not a whole lot in the last, you know, 15 years.
Right.
And even beyond. This project would significantly increase the available housing stock in the city by adding almost 700 new units of various housing types and prices.
Which is excellent and so needed, like you say. And I'm sure since that corridor right now doesn't have things like broadband, which we've discussed
mm-hmm,
as
yes.
well, that they're providing for that and hopefully maybe even fiber to the premises.
You bet. And then that's what's being worked on. I know the county is, that there's a committee, and we have Freddie Rios as part of that committee is with our council to get that to our community. It's
yeah.
definitely needed.
Good.
You bet. And you know, in total, we anticipate we may have an added population, potentially around 1,400, 1,500 residents, you know, in that area that we may, you know, with the townhouses or apartments, you're looking at workforce housing,
mm-hmm.
you know, people that may work here during the week, but they have a place. That's what's wrong, is we don't have places for people to stay.
That's correct.
So hopefully this will help help some of that deficit that we have within our community. You know, in 2022, the city adopted the Central Arizona Government, CAG,
mm-hmm.
and they did a housing study and gap analysis for the Globe Miami area. And this study provided the most recent available housing data analysis available to Globe. And it identified a significant shortfall in housing.
Yeah.
And even a greater shortfall in the variety of housing types to meet current housing needs.
Sure.
So the study also emphasizes housing projects are difficult due to the LA terrain. And we talked about that. It's hard to find large areas where we can do, you know, large developments.
Right.
You know, I live in Pioneer Hills. I bought there in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the last large developments that took place in the community. It was county back then, but it was all new housing when I moved there in 1975. The proposed Marigold project, if developed, would make a significant impact in the current housing shortfall in the Globe Miami community. You know, we could look at people selling their homes in the Claypool area or the county areas and moving there and then putting their houses up for rent, which gives us even more stock that we're anticipating.
And that'll become even more viable when the sewer comes in, TRSD, because right now there's a lot of properties that are lying vacant, waiting.
That people abandon because they can't develop their land into or putting a sewer system or septic tank within it. So, you know, when Monte de Golba looked at the area, they really embraced that challenge of the terrain as part of their interest. So we're looking at several elevations, and even in that Apache drive-in area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so they're going to have to look at that and see, you know, their design will come in. They're really wanting to work with the people that live there. They know their scenery to the Pinal Mountains is very important. So
yes.
I'm assuming that the larger structures will go in the lower end where it doesn't obstruct their views that they've had for so many years. So, you know, that's going to be huge. And you know, the other big thing is they're utilizing the Opportunity Zone. And the Opportunity Zone is a designation by the federal government for areas that receive a tax credit. And that's huge for rural areas, rural communities.
Yes.
What we're going back to, the legislature's going back into session, what we really want to push is that we want to make sure that they can expand those opportunity zones. You know, I think the city of Globe got a lot of their area into the opportunity zone, which that's why we have a lot of interest. But when you look at Miami area, they didn't put, like, half the town downtown is on the north side is in the opportunity zone and half isn't.
Ooh,
so,
not good.
No, it isn't. So, like, the new building they're looking at, the old Inspiration School, that's in the opportunity zone, and so are the businesses on that side.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side really should have been, don't understand how they made these divided lines, but it's important that we expand it, and that's what we're going to look for as they go into session. We want to make sure they expand those. We made with Congressman Eli Crane, he made a visit here this week.
Good.
And we really emphasized about our opportunity zones, and we really emphasized that we need him to continue to support, you know, the fundies there, support our project. We went through all the projects that we have in place and we're going to look in the future, and he's very supportive of, you know, writing support letters for us. We're meeting with Senator Sinema this week.
Good.
And so we're going to be continuing to push, not only for Globe Miami and all rural communities in Arizona. That's
right.
Important.
Right, and the unincorporated areas, because, you know, we've got Miami, we got Globe, but you've got a lot of county property that should be included in that as well.
Yeah, you bet. So, you know, that's what we're trying to push. And we're getting ready to make our trip to Washington, D.C. in March. And we'll be meeting with all the legislators in that area, bringing our projects forward, requesting assistance. I mean, there's so many things that we need the assistance for. You know, we have a McCormick tunnel that we're really concerned about that needs to be reconstructed. It's up above, up on Mesquite and Bailey. If that were to fail, that would flood down on North Broad Street. So we've been aware of that for several years. We've been working at, we have $100,000. We're doing a study on it right now. And we're hoping that the Army Corps of Engineers comes through and helps us out with funding on that.
Oh, yeah.
So the preliminary, as I close on this one, the preliminary design plight submitted has been reviewed by the City of Globe. Well, like I said, we've been in dialogue with them for several years. Our Public Works has looked at it, Fire Department, Police Department, Building, and the Zoning Administrator. And, you know, based on the limited information, again, conceptual drawings provided and the scale of the proposed development, our staff sees no concerns that all city building, fire, and zoning code requirements will be met. You know, they obviously got to still deal with ADOT on the main highway.
Right.
They'll deal with Lomars and Clomars with the flood zone and flood areas, because some of that area is in the flood zone. But that will be all taken care of before it's brought back. And we anticipate that the full design and scope and development will be brought to planning and zoning. We're hoping as early part of 2024 in the next couple of months.
That's great.
And it'd be great if we could break ground this year and in the next 6 months. Man, that would be amazing. And I think talking to him, I think the first part of it will be the residential housing first will be tackled, and then they'll move on to the other structures that go on there. So it's exciting. I mean, it's a new development. It's something we've never seen. And we hope that it all works out. We think it's never gone this far. This has always been out there, but it's never gone this far.
That's great. Now, have they purchased the property already?
Yes.
They've got it.
Everything is
so
there.
So they've got a stake in making this happen.
You bet. And they have the investors. And that has always been the sticky part, you know, getting the investors, because it's all about money. Just like Hill Street School, we had many proposals for Hill Street School. But
no funding.
No funding. You know, it's okay to have dreams and it's okay to ideas, but if you don't have the funds to actually put things in motion, it's not going to happen.
Correct.
So that was my extent of my my report this month. I'm open to any questions. If you have any questions,
we could give that phone number again. Now I don't expect much, though. though I will say that the good news is people do download them. These shows are online in perpetuity, and of course they run on Sunday morning on KJAA as well, 1240 AM and 106.1 FM. But if you want to call, I'd be impressed. 888-876-5593. That's 888-ROLLYE. And I'm not being egotistical. The number's used for a different purpose, but it'll work for this too. So if you'll give us a call, that'd be terrific. But it's very exciting, you know, when you talk about, well, we got infrastructure projects. Most people they would yawn at the thought of it, but the reality is that's the difference between having a viable, livable community and not.
You bet.
And we've talked before about there are other things that need to be addressed, education and such, that bring people to an area.
Yep.
But it's sort of like one step at a time. If you don't have the housing, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
And of course, we for years looked and still do at Resolution Copper about maybe revitalizing the area. But the reality at this point is the timetable on that is completely unknown.
Exactly. It could be 5 years down the road still.
It's just heartbreaking.
But the thing is, if we bring these development, in the future, we're going to get some of that indirect housing issues here in our community. So we just got to prepare ourselves and continue to grow from there.
That's it, because we assume that eventually that project will come to fruition. And right now, when surveys are taken, nobody's planning to come here. Well, there's nowhere to live.
Mm-hmm.
So, if that and schooling and everything else is tackled at the same time, this becomes a very viable option.
You bet. You know, and as you see these large developments, such as the Hill Street and such as the Marigold project, you really excite and bring other developers interested into the community, which is we all benefit from.
And that's so true. It is. It's almost like lemmings. You know, one comes and then three more want to. So that's excellent. Well, looking at what you're facing this year, what do you see as the biggest obstacle in terms of where you're saying, I'm going to overcome this? Is there any one thing you're looking at where you're saying this is going to happen in 2024?
Well, I think we know the projects are going to happen. We know the funding's there. You know, obviously the sidewalk project is huge for us. You know, that's a $3.5 million project.
Yeah.
Cottonwood. We're looking at Yuma Bridge. We're looking at McCormick Tunnel. There's so much in the makes. We're looking at a new fire station, $13 million fire station.
Good. Where will that be?
That'll be at the site right there. But prior to Third and Ash Street, we already bought the doctor office there, the old Dr. Durham office.
Oh, good.
And we're in the process of getting that mitigated and tore down. That'll be torn down, and then we'll be building a state-of-the-art fire station, which really centralizes us also. You know, I like the one downtown because I grew up there. I've spent 30 years there. But, you know, I think it's more as the growth goes towards the Northeast Corridor, it gives us a little more central location where we can respond from. Mm-hmm. So it's a good location, and it's hard to find land that isn't affected by flood zones and, you know, flood areas. So that area was just perfect for plenty of room to do what we want to do in that area. So.
And there's water.
There's water, sewer, there's everything.
Yeah,
there,
and that's so important because years ago, I remember the stories about a Home Depot wanted to come here but couldn't come here because of actually water pressure, not so much water usage. So
gallons per minute, yeah.
That's right.
You bet.
And if that can be eliminated as something that would otherwise be an impediment to growth, that would be huge.
Yeah, and it has been. You know, I was there when Home Depot was coming, and we looked at the plans, and it was about a 30,000 square foot building, and it was huge, and it required like 2,400 GPMs an hour, and we only had like 1,400 in the Fry's area and stuff.
Yes.
But Arizona Water now has, who supplies that area, has already upgraded their water system to larger water line. Now they do have the water pressure or the GPMs at 2,400, 3,000 in that area too. So it could satisfy growth in that area too.
Right.
Commercial growth.
As population and housing increases, we'll start to see more of that commercial interest again. I know it slowed down. Of course, the whole pandemic slowed everything down, but we assume that won't be forever. So it's nice to think the infrastructure's there when we're ready.
You bet. And I think it will be. And, you know, we have a couple of restaurants that are going to be open. There's some other ones that I can't disclose, but they're in the pipe to open again. We're hoping to fill more buildings downtown. I think our biggest struggle when you talk about there are challenges is going to be what the legislature is going to do. What bills are they going to try and restrict rural communities from? And that's where we had a big, you know, we had a battle with the legislators proposing bills in regards to zoning, in regards to rentals, in regards to food tax and stuff like that. And that really cripples rural areas.
Right.
You know, they really need to stay out of rural communities than the way we are able to survive, the way we are able to grow. Because once they start restricting us in the state and make it law, then it just ties our hands, so we aren't able to do things.
That's a nightmare, because of course the legislatures are sitting there in the middle of Phoenix,
exactly,
and most of the people in it are coming from larger areas.
Yep.
So the idea of having counties and cities and CAG and everything else staying on them, because it's very easy to discount, and the reality is the growth of America will be rural America.
You bet. Yeah, bet. And then it just seems like this year was a horrible year. You know, in the 7 years I've been in, this has been the worst that I've seen, where more bills were introduced by the legislature and in order to restrict rural communities more. And it's a shame, because it was more about party. It was party driven. It was party voted. And a lot of these, if the governor wouldn't have vetoed them, would have taken effect. Especially the food tax. If she wouldn't have vetoed the food tax, then we would have been affected in the amount of about $1 million a year loss in revenue to Globe.
That's truly horrifying to think that that's what you're fighting now. You're mentioning so many more bills were introduced. Hopefully not many were passed. But with that in mind, of course, we don't know. 2024 is an election year.
Exactly.
So once again, everything is up for grabs.
Yep.
But of course, the good news about that is that a lot of these people, if not most, in some cases, are up for re-election.
Yep.
So this is the time to basically be going after them when they need some brownie points.
You bet. And that's what kind of you see all the time. It's that time of year, and that's where you're going to see more things come at you.
And so this is where they should understand that, hey, you know, you come down on rural counties, we come down on you.
That's it. You bet. No. So that's kind of the challenge. We're waiting to see what the legislature, they go into session, I think, here in a couple of weeks, and we'll see where that goes. I never thought it was so much politics to try and protect your rural, your city, or whatever, but that's what it's about. You have to be active in order to protect what you have within your city and rural communities.
Absolutely, because, you know, money talks, everyone else walks, and when you look at dollars, the rural communities don't have as much to bring to the table, so it requires some very loud voices. And it's good that it seems that the federal government at least has much more of an eye toward we have to beef up rural communities.
You bet.
So, and in a state like Arizona, there are a lot of rural communities.
You bet, yep. Yep, and yeah, and that's what we'll continue to battle. I hope it's not as bad as last year. I hope it'll, because of election year, maybe it won't be, you know, I think.
Yeah, I really think that they're going to need to put their game face on for this, and this is a time to capitalize, especially those who seem vulnerable in renewal in re-election. Why not? There's no reason not to go after that. But, you know, you mentioned 2023 being tough, and I think it was for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. 2024 is frightening to many people because there's such a sense of unease of not knowing where things are going. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter that you're, you know, going to fast food and you thought you were spending $2 and you were spending $22 and all that. It's hitting every one of us.
You bet.
And I don't see, you know, of course my crystal ball is certainly dusty, but I don't see any real evidence of how it will go in any direction. I mean, to me, 2024 is up for grabs. What do you see?
Yeah. I agree with you. You bet. You know, we just don't know. You know, we had a rough year. You know, ever since COVID, it's just all been kind of recovery is what it's been to try and get ourselves back to that point again.
Well, right. And, you know, you actually can take it back to 2008 and the changes at the Bank of International Settlements. And, of course, we reacted to that. And for anybody who doesn't know, the Bank of International Settlements is the Federal Reserve's Federal Reserve. So they changed the rules in 2008, and so it affected us tremendously. But it seems that at that point, we fixed it by throwing money at it.
Yep.
And so now, of course, it's come home to roost, the higher, inflation and things of this nature. And I honestly haven't heard of anyone, I don't care party or philosophy, who's come up with a real answer, a sustainable answer for how we move forward. Now, from your position, well, one step at a time, one project at a time, we just focus on what we can do. But looking at the bigger picture, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. It's tough. You got to have a plan in place. You know, as we went through our, you know, budget times and everything, we were just budget to budget. You know, there wasn't a plan to increase our revenue, and now we did implement
which
plans.
Which is wonderful.
And we have to have that. People need to understand we can't survive on just normal taxation every year to year. We have to come up with some ideas and options to increase that revenue.
Right, because if you don't, taxation's going to have to go through the roof to survive. That's the only way to keep tax rates. And tax rates here are not low. Our sales tax comparatively is very high here.
Yep.
And it really doesn't have anywhere to go.
No. And you don't get a lot from property tax from homes either. So really the key to our survival, and that was from the beginning, is economic development, tourism, bringing people from the outside, bringing outside money into our community to help pay for what we have here.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
And you've been doing an admirable job of it. I mean, a lot came through in 2023 in a difficult year, and I'm glad that you're watching it. Do you have people in-house who take a look at the legislature constantly, or do you have consultants, or how does that work?
We do, yeah. And we do have somebody that does look at them on a regular basis. Our city manager is very involved with the political part of it. That was part of where he came from. You know, he was part of all the politics in the Maricopa County and all that. So you need to understand. We have legislative day coming up in a couple of weeks where we go down, and that's where all the mayors meet and council, and we talk to the legislators down there. So we've been more active in keeping track of what's going on. We get weekly reports.
Good.
And through the League of Cities, if there's a bill out there that's going to affect our city or rural cities, then that's where we step up and we'll go testify wherever it is in the House and the Senate, whatever it takes to try and get that bill not to pass, you know, in the legislature. So we do track it on a weekly basis.
And that's good, because the last thing you want to be is blindsided.
You bet.
And it would be easy for that to happen. There's a lot of moving parts in this.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Yeah. Now, in terms of feedback from the community, what are the biggest issues on people's minds?
You know, I think a lot of the things we've heard is parking is one of our biggest issues. I haven't really heard a lot of negative of what we're doing. I think we've heard some things out there about our building code and trying to clean up and bring our beautification through code enforcement is very important, not only in our city, but in the county and the town of Miami.
Yes.
I mean, we bring developers here, and they want to see a community. They don't want to see a filthy community. That was one of the things we heard is, well, the corridor's always dirty. It's a filthy globe. It's a filthy area to live in. That's what we've been trying to concentrate on, cleaning up frontage in businesses, old signs that have been up for a long time. We want to get those down and try and, and there have been a lot of businesses painting their buildings, putting new signs up and stuff like that. That's what's attracted to these developers.
Interesting. I can see the pushback on people who just don't want to make the investment or the time or whatever. Don't pass anything new. But the reality is if someone's coming here on Highway 60, which is some of the most beautiful terrain we've got in the state, you drive through this and you're done with that. And all of a sudden, you get to Miami. And the reality, I know they've tried, but unfortunately, it still looks like the South Bronx. And the bottom line is that is not an inviting picture. And the only way to fix that is through code enforcement and force, actually, because there's nothing in it for anybody who's not planning to do anything with the property. Just let it lie there. So I would think that as many people who might directly complain because they're affected, you've got many, many more who are thrilled to see it because they know how integral it is to improving the area.
You bet, yeah. And it's change is hard. It really is. And people don't like code enforcement. But it's a vital part of our economic development.
It truly
is. It has to be, because if we can't have a mechanism in order to make people do it, because they aren't going to do it, and some people you need to fine them, take them to court and stuff like that, you have to have that mechanism in place in order to move forward with it.
Right. The key, I think, is that it has to be applied equally. It has to be fair. Mm-hmm. It can't be a situation where somebody is targeted and they're seeing five other properties that aren't being targeted in the same position. Now, I would understand the angst from that. But as long as it's uniform, then ultimately, I think the greater community is going to stand behind that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And I think it is. I think people are understanding now. We're not targeting. We're balancing out. The other kickback we get is that when you buy in a historic downtown area like Globe and Broad Street, there are more restrictions than there is outside of that area.
Yeah.
So you have to abide by the Historic Preservation Committee. You have to submit plans to what your frontage is going to look like, what your color is going to look like, what signs are going to look like, because it's a designated historic area, and we need to make sure we maintain that status.
Right, and that's universal to any historic area. So it's not anything that's just individual to Globe.
Yeah.
And I would think that has to be almost with an iron fist, because it's easy to go from historic to dump. And it's only the enforcement and the zoning and the regulations that stop that from happening.
You bet. And I don't think in the past, in the history, that we've code has been in there, but we haven't really enforced it.
Yeah,
so it's hard, because it's been like that for so many years, but all of a sudden we hit it and change it. They think what we're targeting, we're not. It's been in code for a long time.
Right. Right, and as long as everybody else on Broad Street is getting the exact same notice for the same violations, then nobody can claim I'm being singled out because of.
You bet.
So yeah, well that's a tough position. I hope the code enforcement department have unlisted phone numbers. at home anyway, but of course for the public it needs to be accessible, and it is.
Yeah, and that's a tough job. You bet. That is a truly tough job.
All right. So we've taken up a half hour of your time. Will you join us next month?
I will, yeah.
What I said to Tim is he hadn't picked out the dates yet, so I said he should communicate with you so that you both agree on whatever dates you want. And I'm open to any Monday you want to pick.
Okay.
And love having you here, and thanks for being here, Al.
Yeah, and thank you.
All right. And so, again, this will replay on Sunday on KJAA, 1240 AM and 106.1 FM, and it will be online in perpetuity before the week is up at kqss.net.